You are listening to the RTE Brainstorm Podcast, proudly supported by Research Ireland.
Hi, my name is Ella McSweeney and this is Brainstorm. If you want to know about new ideas from the world around you, then this is the podcast for you. The latest data on Irish baby names from the Central Statistics Office shows that Patrick remains a popular name and it's ranked 19 overall. But Paddy, one of the name's many variations, has entered the top 100 boys' name for the first time. So where have all the Patricks gone? Dr. Dylan O'Connor is an associate professor at the School of Geographical Sciences and Urban Planning at the Arizona State University. Dylan, when did you first think about this question of where have all the Patricks gone?
Let me give you a quick background. So a couple of years ago, the Geographical Society of Ireland, they were running a series on Dunleary. And knowing that I'm from Dunleary, they reached out and they asked me if I could write a piece on it. And at that stage, I was doing a lot of work on Irish population history, you know, where people lived, where people were having big families, where people are having small families. And I started to work with, for those of you who are interested in ancestry, the 1901 and the 1911 censuses of Ireland are fully available online. And as a social scientist, I've been analyzing these data for years, trying to understand, you know, what was happening in the population in Ireland in the past. And as I started to work on this question around Dunleary, something I kind of stumbled across something by accident, but which was really striking. I was looking at differences in family sizes in places like Dalkey, Glenageary, Dunleary, all across the borough. And one thing that I noticed was that in the families and in the households, parents were having fewer kids. They also seemed to be giving their kids really unusual names. And so it was, you know, kind of striking. You'd see one household next door to another where one had two kids and the other had, you know, six or seven. And the kids that, you know, where there were only two, the names were completely different to the household next door where there were seven.
Like what? Give us an example.
Sure, yeah. So so in the household with seven, you would get names like Mary. Mary in the past in Ireland was really striking because in 1900, one in five girls were named Mary. So you could imagine a school class in 1900, you know, a fifth of the girls, you know, you could expect to be named Mary. Then you'd have other names in these kind of big families, James, John, Patrick in particular, Bridget is another one. And then in the smaller families, you'd have names like Sarah or Harry or, you know, names which were, you know, maybe not as common. And so, you know, that's kind of in the more common case. And, you know, you might get, you know, even more unusual names than that. You know, you might get a Violet or a Cecilia or something like that. And so this was kind of, you know, a kind of a curiosity. And so, you know, the kind of next question was, is this kind of a weird Dunleary oddity, or was there something bigger going on? And so what we did was we enlarged the analysis, or we scaled it up, as we say, to the whole country. And we started to look at, you know, is there actually a link between the types of names that people give their children and, you know, their kind of the size of their family that they ultimately end up having. And it turns out that, you know, we looked at things like education and predicting family size, occupation, religion, of course. And it turns out that the strongest predictor of whether a couple had a large or a small family in Ireland in the past could actually be predicted from the first name of their first child. And so this was, you know, totally striking and kind of mind-blowing. And so this, you know, just got a fair bit of international attention as well, because it's a kind of a surprising and unusual phenomenon. And of course, it's not the, you know, obviously the names are not determining the size of the family. What it actually picks up on is something in the minds of the parents, you know, so it's kind of capturing something about how the parents are thinking about their kids, how they're thinking about their families. And that plays out in a couple of different ways, not just in the names of the kids, but also in the size of the overall family that they end up having.
And is what you picked up on essentially Catholic families and Protestant families? So to be Patrick, for example, was to be Catholic.
Totally. And so that was the initial intuition. And so people had speculated on that in the past. And so we thought, you know, maybe this is a kind of a Catholic-Protestant difference. You know, the Protestant family of one boy and one girl is something that a lot of people are familiar with in Ireland. But it actually turns out that that's not the case. That's not what's happening. It's actually not so much a Catholic-Protestant difference, but it's actually a kind of a kind of conservative or liberal or kind of more traditional modern kind of mindset difference. And so even when you look among the Protestants or among the Jewish population, which was much bigger in the past in Ireland, you see the same pattern. The parents who rely on the kind of older, more traditional names have much larger families. And it's actually the parents who are kind of almost searching for newer names who are the first people actually to start to, you know, bring the size of the Irish family down. Striking relationship between things that you wouldn't think are connected, but which seem to be.
So to have a Patrick in your family meant that you had a large number of children, but also that you identified as being traditional. You came from traditional values. Usually, I presume, things like you named your first child after your grandfather or your father. Is that it?
That's exactly right. And so what you see is in these families that are having, you know, more children, there's a much greater reliance on older names in the family and in the community. And, you know, in rural communities in particular, you see this where actually the child who gets the son who gets the father's name will often be the one who also inherits the land. And so what's really striking about this is actually when you start to look at how the names in Ireland are changing over time, the places where families are adopting new kinds of names, it also coincides with the size of the average family shrinking. And so it's almost a kind of a, you know, a cultural story of how parents are reimagining the future through both the sizes of their families and also the kids.
And just how much was Patrick used? I mean, if you take, I don't know, say the middle of the last century, how many Patricks would have been named in any particular year compared to now, for example?
In the middle of the last century, you'd be talking about something like 1 in 7 sons could be named Patrick. That might have been even, you know, it could be down to 1 in 5 or 1 in 6. If you go to something like 1900, today, you know, it's probably less than 1 in 100. You know, so there's two things going on here, turning away from names like Patrick and Mary and Bridget. But we're also actually drawing from a much wider range of names. So in the past, you know, something like 80% of kids would be getting one of the top 20 names. Today, it's several hundred names, you know, make up the kind of top 80% of names that are going to kids.
Is that just essentially what happens when you globalize your culture, that, you know, an information flow, and you have bigger access to ideas and options for different names in a way that you just wouldn't have had back in the early 20th century at all?
Yeah, so there's definitely a piece of external influence. And so, you know, I think as Irish people, you know, one thing we're really known for is that we actually look out, you know, so we look to the United States, we look to the United Kingdom. And, we've actually had a lot of success, actually, in terms of being kind of a global society and using ideas from abroad and also exporting ideas. But actually, if you look at the names that are becoming very popular at the moment, there's actually a kind of a counter trend, which is really interesting. And that is, we're not so much these days pulling in names from abroad, but we're actually searching now for Irish names, which are kind of much more, which are not traditional, but are much more common and, you know, which are much more local and authentic. And so just to give a couple of examples, if you're thinking about boys' names, you know, I have two nephews, Finn and Oren, and these names, you know, wouldn't have been, you know, common names in the past in Ireland, but they're Irish and they sound authentic. Liam is another example of, you know, of a name that's become globally popular, but is also very popular in Ireland. And Fia, you know, is the kind of real headline name among girls, which kind of came out of nowhere maybe 10 years ago and is, you know, consistently in the top 10 list of girls now. So there's actually a turn now at the moment toward Irish names, which are not traditional, but which are local and authentic and in some way new.
And is that a sort of pursuit of wanting to culturally identify and be seen to culturally identify as being Irish and from Ireland, but also wanting to be sufficiently different from calling your kid Patrick or Mary?
I think that's exactly right. Yeah, I think we want to be modern Irish people, but we want to, you know, embrace our Irish identity. And I actually think that some of this kind of goes with a kind of a bigger cultural movement, which I think of as being the kind of hipster movement, where all around the world, people are looking for things that, you know, identify them, but which are local and authentic and are not kind of mass produced and global in the, you know, in the same way that maybe the culture was maybe 25 years ago.
And there was this period in 1978 to 1982, you write about, where this name, the name Leslie, suddenly appeared. And yet, I mean, does anyone know why? You said in your piece, you still have no idea why Leslie was around, but it was very, very popular. And then suddenly, in 1982, it disappeared.
Totally. And I still don't have an answer to the Leslie question. It's amazing, actually, to the Central Statistics Office, the CSO, has some amazing visualizations on names. And if you put in, and so you can basically track a name over time and how its popularity is changing on their website. And Leslie is one of these names that in this window of maybe 4 years, there's just this upsurge in Leslie's. And I've never managed to figure it out. And actually the head of the Irish Cultural Center here is a Dubliner named Leslie. And I actually talked to her about it, and she also has no idea. But all of the Leslies we both know are all born around that period. And so,
because inevitably it'll come from culture.
Just to figure it out. Sorry, go ahead.
Inevitably, it tends to come, those anomalies tend to come from popular culture, don't they? I mean, I'm just thinking of this year, there's been an upsurge in the use of the Ken for a boy. And that presumably is to do with the Barbie film. And Killian for a boy. And that's probably to do with the Oppenheimer film and Killian Murphy, who stars in it.
Absolutely, yeah. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if Leslie has been drawn from some television show or something at the time. We just haven't managed to track down exactly which Leslie it was.
And yet Patrick has persisted, hasn't it? I mean, in different forms, perhaps not in its original Patrick case, but in different forms, it still is persisting.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of, in Ireland, there are many different Patricks, right? So there's, there's Patricks and Packies and Paudies. Paddy has continued to be a popular name. And actually Patrick itself, the original form, has continued to rank in the top 30 boys' names, you know, fairly consistently, which is quite different to a name like Bridget, which was perhaps even more popular than Patrick in the past. And Bridgets have almost totally gone out of existence. You know, I think they're outside of the top 250 names in Ireland now. I think some of this, what could be going on here is there's actually a lot more girls' names than boys' names. So I think there's three times as many girls' names as boys' names. And so there's a general reliance, I think, among parents to still try to rely on established boys' names and not be too adventurous. And so I think that can partly maybe explain why Patrick has persisted.
Does that go back to the idea that certainly in the past, and it still goes on today, land tends to be inherited through the eldest child who is a boy?
I don't think that that's what's driving this persistence. I think parents just in general seem to be a little more conservative with their the names of their sons. It's not exactly clear why that is. You know, one example I think of this is, you know, the girl's name Amelia has become quite popular in Ireland and in many other places. But I don't see many parents turn toward a boy's name like Emiliano, for example, as a, you know, a counterweight. Parents are kind of more hesitant to kind of make that jump with the boys.
The habit over here of naming your child after the father or the mother, is that gone now? I mean, it seems something that certainly when I was younger would have been very common, but not so much today.
No, it's definitely become less common. I think it's in particular in urban areas and in cities that tends to be a pretty rare practice these days. I think there are a lot of rural communities and in the countryside where it's still, you know, those types of traditions still hold up. And again, you know, that's partly linked to, you know, things like land and farming. But some of it is just the, you know, the tradition of those communities. It's interesting that even if you go far into the past, even in places like Dublin and Cork, there was a reluctance even relative to the countryside to pick what they call patronyms. That's the, you know, the parent's name for the children.
And has it moved into the middle name now, so that when you're naming your child, you might select a kind of far out name as the first name to individualize yourself, but the middle name still pulls you back into your grandfather or your grandmother?
Absolutely. And I think that that's, you know, and you see that both for, you know, fathers and mothers' names, but of course, uncles and grandparents. And I think that, you know, that partly reflects the, you know, we these days in particular, we want to think about our kids as new individual people in the world, but we want them to also have a tie to the past and to earlier generations. And so that seems to be the compromise that, you know, parents make now, which is we want to kind of pick a new name for our new first name for our children. And then, you know, we can maintain that tradition in the middle name.
It's a whole other body of work, but I'm just thinking about all the tens and hundreds of thousands of Irish who left and emigrated around the world around the same time that you're looking at, around the 20th century and onwards. Have you had any sense that these patterns persisted with Irish people who moved and didn't come back from places like Australia and America?
Absolutely. And that's really striking, because when you actually look at the names of Irish Americans, in some ways they actually cling more tightly in many senses to the Irish culture actually than the, you know, people in Ireland do themselves. And I think that that's a, you know, a kind of an image that we have of Irish Americans often, which is, you know, we say they're more Irish than the Irish. And that actually seems to hold up when you actually look at the names of children. And, you know, Liam, for example, is, I think it might be the most popular boy's name in the United States at the moment. And I'm sure a lot of that interest is among people who identify their heritage as Irish. What's interesting about the Irish abroad is that you actually see even later, you know, if you fast forward, you know, a lot of these people would have moved, you know, late 1800s, early 1900s. If you fast forward those generations into the 60s and 70s, they're actually still relying on names often that were popular in Ireland 50 years before when their parents or grandparents moved. And so it's a real kind of identification with Ireland at a particular moment in time, even as people in Ireland have actually often moved beyond those trends.
It is the embodiment of Ireland, isn't it? You know, like the paddy.
You know, that's how we're known abroad in some countries. And when people tell jokes about Irish people, you know, we're paddy Irishmen, right? The names seem to run on a kind of a rhythm of, you know, maybe two decades. You know, you do see these cycles where there's a set of names which are kind of available to parents over 20, 25 years. And then actually often with big cultural shifts, you see the names dramatically shift. And so you see this actually a couple of times. So let's say 1900 up to 1960, you know, the names stay pretty consistent across that period. And then they change a lot as you move into the 60s up until the 90s. And then, you know, that's kind of a, you know, Ireland becoming a bit more modern. And then in the Celtic Tiger period, the names dramatically change, you know, very quickly over, you know, 5 or 10 years, you know, and so that's the kind of Chloe and Ryan generations. And what we're seeing actually since kind of post-crash, maybe after 2015, that's where we're starting to see the kind of Fia, the Finns, more Liams. And so there's been another shift again in the names. So I think it's not so much that they come in and out of fashion, but it's that when there are big cultural shifts, we also see big shifts in the types of names that people are drawing on.
That's really interesting. So post-crash, I mean, is that some sort of emotional need to feel secure? What is that? You know, the point of vulnerability, economic vulnerability, when everything's up in the air, there's a lot of misery about. Why is that?
Yeah. I think there could be some of that. I think what actually might be happening, what my sense of what's happening is, there is almost a little bit of a rejection of the culture that developed during the Celtic Tiger. And so I think what you see in those names in the kind of Celtic Tiger period is a lot of them are kind of very London New York, names that were popular in London and New York, and it's very kind of global Ireland and outward looking. And what we've seen since then is actually a bit more of a turn inward, you know, and so that's when these kind of local authentic names become really popular. And so I think we're kind of rediscovering our identity after a period of, you know, when we kind of intensively looked outwards, you know, and tried to become much more global.
And so what's your prediction now for Patrick in the future? Having looked back to the 1900s, what's your prediction in the future?
So I think one thing where I can see a way for Patrick to make a resurgence is actually, I think one thing we're going to start to see more of, and we're starting to get a little bit of it, are actually more gender neutral names. And so, you know, Alex, Rian, you know, there are even Quinns, names where people don't, where parents don't want to ascribe a kind of really strong gender identity to the kids. I think actually Pat is a name actually that can kind of occupy that space where, you know, it can, you know, either be identified with a boy or a girl. And I think actually that's one thing that could actually cause a resurgence in the name as parents increasingly start to search for these, you know, more gender neutral, flexible names.
Dr. Clodagh Tait is a lecturer in history at the Mary Immaculate College in Limerick. Clodagh, this thing of looking at the names and what it can say about society and culture and history and all the rest, what is it all about?
Well, I think names, we all have a name. We all have an opinion about names. I think that there are certain ones we like and there are certain ones we're not as fond of, I guess. And I guess names have associations with people that we've met in the past. So I think that names are something that universally we have an interest in as well. There will always be, you'll always have some sort of opinion about the names that people are called. So names are important and names are everywhere.
Your granny wrote a book in the 1930s called The Motherhood Book, and in it she suggested names. Can you remember what kind of names did she suggest?
Well, it wasn't one that she wrote herself. It was one that I found amongst her possessions. It was one of these general what to expect when you're expecting precursors from that period. And she clearly had consulted that book to name my mother and her sisters. Because I had always wondered, you know, where those names had come from. And there they were, inside, or at least three of the four were inside in the motherhood book. So what interested me about that was that the early influence I felt of baby naming books, how people might, you know, traditionally have been inspired to name their children from inside their own family circles. But in the 20th century, it seems that that kind of task becomes both more difficult and easier as a range of newer names are being offered for consumption, for use by a greater range of people.
I mean, you've looked back 300-400 years at this, haven't you? Back to the 16th century.
Yeah.
What can we tell by looking at the names from the 16th century to 2024? I mean, what are we trying to say about the country that we're in?
I suppose in the early modern period, in the 16th and 17th and 18th century, the range of names that were used was fairly small. Lots of people get called the same kinds of names. There's lots of Johns and Elizabeths and Marys and Catherines and Thomas would be another one. So, you know, there are lots and lots of people who are given roughly the same names over many generations. So one of the things that is interesting is that kind of expansion of naming options from the maybe the 18th century onwards. You begin to see a greater range of names being used. I think probably first in more urban areas and kind of parts of the country with greater international connections, perhaps, and then kind of spreading into all parts of Ireland in the 20th century.
So back then, everyone called a small number of names. How did they distinguish themselves? And I'm just thinking of my kids' friends, there's four Jacks, you know, and it's a kind of, it drives you mad trying to know which Jack you're talking to and how you distinguish them. Back then, how did they do that?
Well, they did that by nicknames. I mean, nicknaming was really important in past circumstances. If you had a stock of family names and lots of the cousins are called by similar names, there's several Johns or Williams or Catherines or something like that, then you will use nicknames to distinguish them from one another, either kind of diminutives of the name. So what's striking, I guess, about some of those older, kind of more popular, the kind of names that were more popular in the 16th, 17th, 18th centuries, is that they're kind of endlessly adaptable. You know, a Patrick can become a Paddy or a Pat, a John can be a Johnny or a Jack, an Elizabeth can be Liz or Lizzie or Bet or Beth or something like that. So nicknames that were diminutives of the names were frequently used. And kind of beyond that, communities were often very resourceful in finding other ways to distinguish people of the same name from one another. So they might be known by their father or their mother's name. So there might be John Pat Ryan and John Thomas Ryan, the Pat and the Thomas being the father of the two different men, or even over several generations, it might be, you know, John Pat Tommy or something like that, you know, kind of tracing you back to your grandparents, so that even people with very similar names can be distinguished by those kind of patronymics, those family or father's names. And then beyond that, again, there's a range of other nicknaming practices that were common in various parts of Ireland, where, you know, a personal characteristic or a some incident in the person's past might be used to give them a little nickname. I was noticing in the election posters recently, there was one man whose nickname was Chicken and another man whose nickname was Egg. And I was really intrigued to find out where those nicknames might have come from. But again, you know, in a community, in a pool of people with similar names, those kind of nicknames can be important in telling them apart as well.
There's a great Reddit post about Irish nicknames. You know, what Irish nicknames do you know? Some of them were Pilot, because he once wore a brown jacket, and John the Baptist, a lad called John who threw someone in the canal after a fight.
It can be the tiniest things that people remember, and some of them are not complimentary as well. You know, some of them in the school's folklore collection, if you have a look for nicknames, you'll find collections of nicknames in places like Tipperary and Kilkenny where some of the people got nicknames that were quite harsh in some ways.
How much of it all was about land and inheritance? So the idea that you would be called, we'll say, Patrick, because your father's Patrick, your grandfather, your great-grandfather, and you all own the same plot of land.
That's probably true. And it was very common for family names to be preserved over generations. I mean, we might look at that kind of pool of Johns or Williams and, you know, just see names being picked out of the air. But, you know, each William that was named might be named that because they reminded their parents of previous generations, or people wanted to honour previous generations through their naming practice. So in Ireland, it was very common that the first grandchild or the first child in a family would be named after its paternal grandfather. father or grandmother. And of course, as you say, in a society where land and the inheritance of land and so on was very important, the inheritance of names reminded people of who owned particular plots of land. So yeah, it's very common. You'll see Patrick the father and Patrick the son and Patrick the grandson, or in my own family, there's quite a number of Williams. So you'll have the grandfather is Bill and the son is Billy and the next generation is William. Again, kind of keeping that name, keeping that name itself as an inheritance, but also kind of tying that family to a particular place as well.
So what you're saying, I mean, it's interesting to think that you're certainly saying that it's all about the family unit. It's about your ancestors, and you name the future generations to provide that kind of link and that through line between father and son and mother and daughter and granddaughter. I would say a lot of people would have guessed that the Marys, the Bridgets, the Patricks all came because of saints and because of religion.
Well, certainly there is that religious influence, and it would have been expected, particularly within the Catholic Church, probably, but also within other denominations as well, that people at least choose a respectable name. And the most respectable names are, of course, ones from the Bible or from the early years of the church, or from the group of the saints. People, these are respectable names, and therefore they're respectable enough to be given to children within Catholic traditions as well. That kind of naming for saints sometimes reflected the time of year when children were born. So you might find quite an upsurge of Patricks in every March, for example, associated with St. Patrick's Day, or you might find an upsurge of Michaels in September, the time of Michaelmas, the feast of Saint Michael, and even, you know, kind of less well-known saints can sometimes make an appearance along the way as well. Saint Lucy, I think, is her feast is somewhere in the middle of the year. So you'd sometimes, if you look at old parish registers and sources like that, you'd sometimes see a little bump of Lucy's at that kind of time, or Stephen's at around St. Stephen's Day.
And St. Gubnet. I mean, so, I know Gubnet is down in Ballyvourney in Cork. Gubnet would have been at one stage quite a common name.
Yes, absolutely. So there are those local saint naming traditions as well, aren't there? That the people from a parish that is named after a particular saint, especially maybe a less well-known in international terms saint, that they might kind of cherish that local saint's name in the local naming practices. St. Gubnet is definitely a good example, or near me is the Diocese of Cloyne, and St. Coleman is one of the saints of that region. So you get some Colemans in this region, or, you know, people with connections to this area might name their children after that saint.
And so why was it then, you were saying in the 1800s or so, there became more names? So instead of there just being Johns and Marys and all the rest, people began to name their children a bit more, with a bit more adventure. Why was that?
Well, I suppose one reason is immigration. This is a period of kind of plantation, the introduction of new populations into the country. So some of the names might come from outside by that means. And of course, you know, there's an ever growing amount of literature that is circulating, books being read, particularly, you know, this would affect particularly English language naming traditions. So books that are being imported, that are being written in Britain, perhaps at the time, and some of those names might kind of seep into local naming practices. And it seems especially that new naming traditions were being adopted by the upper sections of society. So, you know, the lords and ladies would adopt nice names like Amelia and Louisa. I suppose you see it particularly in the naming of girls at this time. And some of these names then might kind of trickle into, over time, might trickle into wider local naming practices. I guess one element that we haven't mentioned is the importance of godparents in naming. So people often were given the names of their the godparent or the one of the godparents of the same gender as themselves. And so naming, maybe more exotic naming traditions might spread by that means, because people would often look for godparents for their children amongst their kind of local network, their local friendship group, but maybe also from this kind of slightly more important sections of society. Somebody of status and standing in the community might be roped in as a godparent, and that the name might kind of be adopted into a family by that means as well. And of course, then, you know, once it's in the family, it gets maybe transported down through the generations.
And what about the Irish that went abroad? I've always got the sense from people I know who've gone abroad in the last 20, 30 years that the more they go abroad, the more Irish the names become, that almost their Irish identity is something that is very much to the fore. But from the 1800s onwards, in as much as you've looked at that, what can you say about what names Irish people around the world used to for their own children?
Yes, again, I suppose they would have adopted the kind of family naming traditions. The family naming traditions often, you know, crossed the Atlantic or went even further afield. So the Patricks and the Johns and the Williams being passed down through the generations, or, you know, a preference perhaps for Irish or Irish sounding names. And in many immigrant communities and in various parts of the English-speaking world in particular, what often seems to happen is that surnames might be adopted as first names, as given to children as their first names. So Casey and what other names can I... I won't think of others now at the moment. But Casey is a good example of a surname that can become a first name as
and
well.
And was that on the maternal side because the surname wasn't carried over, or why did they do
Pardon?
That? Was that on the maternal side because the surname wasn't carried over, or
that
why would they look to the surname?
Yeah, so that was often the case, that it's a name from the kind of general family background. As you say, maybe the name of, if there's a couple, the name of the wife, the surname of the wife, that gets adopted as a new first name within communities, because, you know, the people of English descent, say in America, often use surnames as first names as well. So the Irish aren't unique in this.
Is there a general pattern of moving from using first names where you're identifying with the wider culture and society, wider values, traditional family values, all the rest, towards now what feels like a very individual use of names, like exotic names and different names, and you spell things differently and all the rest?
Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot to that. I suppose that kind of moving away from some of those more traditional names maybe does reflect the wider range of cultural influences that are brought to bear in the present day. But actually, you know, the closer I look at it, the more I see revivals of traditional names. You see quite a lot of popularity and kind of resurgence of popularity of some older Irish names, even kind of ancient Irish names. I think Maeve is one of those that has kind of fluctuated in its popularity, but in recent times you see quite a lot more Maeves. But some of those other Irish language names. And what's interesting as well is that the some of the names like Ava, which might not necessarily be considered an Irish name, is kind of Irishized in some cases by kind of adopting an Irish style spelling for it. So it's not AVA, it's AOBHA. And other kind of variations, Ifada, A-B-H-A, and so on.
And why is that? Why is that happening?
I think people, you know, though they maybe are innovating in name, I mean, it's part of the innovation of names, but also it is, you know, a desire to kind of have those, you know, connections with tradition and connections with the Irish past, I think.
One of the things that I did with my kids was that their middle names refer to their grandparents on either side. So it's a nod to their ancestors and their relations, but not their first names. Am I unusual in that?
I think that is probably very common in Ireland. And so while the Central Statistics Office offers this really interesting tool that you can play around with and you can follow the popularity of names that are being given to children in Ireland since the 1960s. If you look at that, you can see the decline of names, say like Paul or Margaret or Jane or Mary and so on. But actually, probably if you looked closer at the middle names that children are being given in the present time, that's probably where some of those names have migrated to. So the use of middle names allows families to kind of expand their naming options to reference, you know, they can give the child a name that they enjoy and they like and that they might want to play with and so on. But there also is the kind of fail-safe of the middle name so that those family connections can be commemorated by that means. It's certainly the case in my own family as well.
And the tradition of naming the eldest boy in a family after his father, do you think that's dead and gone?
I think for practical reasons, really, that has declined a lot. I don't think it's dead and gone, but it's declined a lot. You know, you want to make sure everybody gets the right post and practical things like that. But at the same time, there are, you know, again, options of using diminutives of names. The father might be William and the son might be Liam. And again, of course, the middle name will allow that family name, that family heritage to be preserved in another way. There are maybe names that might be used to signal that you're an educated person, perhaps, or that you've read various books and things like that, and you're choosing an obscure name from one of the books that you've read. So I think definitely there are various ways in which status can be reflected. I suppose a name like Charlotte that might be, you know, associated with the upper sections of British society in some cases. If you look at some of the baby announcements in the back of the Irish Times, those people who might be expected to be of people of kind of particular social standing, you see, you know, a lot of Olivers and Felixes and things like that. So I think there are certain names that maybe have a connection, a connotation of being higher status in some way.
Or even how the names are spelled. Because I remember meeting someone whose daughter was called Kate, but she spelled it K-A-Y-T-E, which it sort of melts your brain, but also interesting to think, well, why would you do that? Mm. You know, why would you spell something so differently? But in some ways, it's to mark the name out from what is actually a very common name.
Yeah, so kind of set the name apart and thereby kind of set the child apart. And sometimes these things seem like a good idea at the time until your poor Kate, who has had to spell her name for the 100th time in a week. Some people are really just dislike their name and they might still kind of consider some way of changing it or adapting it. I suppose there are certain ways of adapting some names. If you think Catherine is too formal, then you can change yourself to Kate or Katie or something like that. So I suppose that's where those older names were particularly adaptable. But there is that option to change your name.
But the Catholic Church bringing new names into people. I remember my auntie was a nun and all my life she was Leonie until I realised she wasn't Leonie. And my dad always called her Patsy. You know, and that ability to have two names at once seems bizarre to me. Like I wouldn't be able to cope with that, having people calling me two different names. But it was absolutely normal. Absolutely normal at that stage that, you know, the nuns and the priests had different names to the ones that they entered the world with.
Yeah, and you'd love to know the process whereby they adopted their names in religion as to, you know, is that a saint that they were particularly associated or a saint from a place that they had a particular affinity with and so on. I suppose some religious orders might have a kind of range of names that would be particularly acceptable or, you know, saints of that religious order and so on that might be names that people could choose from. But that kind of idea of moving between names in different contexts is very interesting to me. And that idea of adopting additional names at confirmation is always quite interesting, that the kind of process by which that happens. There are lots of people who will be quite put out if they have a particular name and if they're called Charlotte and somebody comes up and finds out their name and then starts calling them Charlie or something like that, giving them a version of their name, or you're introduced as Joseph and the person you're talking to starts referring to you as Joe or something like that. So I think people can be quite unhappy and quite put out by the kind of movement of names or the association of a name with themselves that they're not used to. I certainly am familiar with the mom thing in my own household. My husband is from the US, so he tended to use the term mom. So I seem to be mom.
But it's like St. Patty's Day, isn't it? I don't know anyone in Ireland who doesn't, you know, shiver with disgust St. Patty's Day.
But obviously, it's something that makes a lot of sense, and you know, sometimes actually, you know, the American pronunciation of certain Irish names can maybe be closer to the older Irish pronunciation of them. I mean, the one that someone pointed out to me recently was Mahoney, the surname, or it can be a first name as well. That we know as Mahoney, but might be Mahoney in the US. But you know, someone pointed out that's probably closer to the O'Mahuna that the surname might have originated from. So I guess we need to maybe explore all angles in these kind of circumstances. Clearly, Patty's Day makes a lot more sense in an American context than Paddy, perhaps.
That's interesting. So that then presumably is sort of anglification of that pronunciation in Ireland in a way that it was preserved in America?
I guess so, yeah. Mm-hmm. Something like that. There's some process like that. Well, we do like to complain about things. So I think, you know, that you do see these long threads of people very indignant about the fact that they're called Clodagh and their workmates in England or Scotland or somewhere can't pronounce the name. And certainly I found when I worked in England, I'd get called Clodagh.
Clodagh Tate and Dylan O'Connor, many thanks. For more, go to rte.ie/brainstorm and you can find Brainstorm in all the usual social places. We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's episode and subscribe to Brainstorm wherever you get your podcasts. My name is Ella McSweeney. Until next time.
Brainstorm is produced by Adrian Carty. Research was by Hazel O'Leary and recorded by Shane Dempsey at Collaborative Studios. For RTE Brainstorm, thanks to Jim Carroll, Aoife Ryan Christensen and Neil Lane. The RTE Brainstorm podcast is proudly supported by Research Ireland.